You're tuned to The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman. Writer Jonathan Rabin came to Seattle from his native England in 1991. Microsoft and Starbucks were in their toddler years at the time. Seattle's music scene had become an international sensation. What was once a working man's town was evolving, and Jonathan Rabin was here to chronicle that evolution. A collection of his essays written over a 20-year time span has just been reissued in paperback. The book is called Driving Home, An American Journey. I asked Rabin to describe the city he found when he first got here.
It was, in certain ways, visibly different from now, that there was more sense of, say, the fishing industry, the timber industry, the Seattle traditional industries. And Microsoft was a hugely important presence already, but of course it wasn't nearly as big as it is now. There was a feeling that Seattle was a town closely in touch with its past, and I feel that has gone. And it's been interesting to watch it disappear. I mean, when I came to Seattle in 1990 and went on living here till now, I've already, just in those 23 years, seen a very considerable chunk of Seattle's entire history. And that's kind of quite frightening. I mean, it's a seventh or an eighth of the entire history of Seattle from 1850. And you realize that your own lifetime embodies a sort of quite major fraction of the city's entire life as a white settlement.
You describe that sense of this is the West. There's that whole Western ethic in America, anyways, go West, yes, young man, and find your new destiny. But there were a particular type of people that found themselves in this place, and that was true as much in 1990 as it was in 1890, I imagine. Entrepreneurial type of people who wanted to reinvent things.
I think it is worth saying that Seattle wasn't just the West. It was the wet West. Yeah. I mean, the West is traditionally dry, and water becomes a very, very major commodity. I mean, think of Chinatown, the movie, for instance. Mm-hmm. Seattle hasn't had that. And the west of the Cascade Mountains is an extraordinarily different world from the dry West. And it surprises me that we have, you know, a cis-alpine people and a trans-alpine people sort of spread on either side of the Cascade Ridge. And when you're on the cis-alpine side, yes, it's got a liberal tradition, largely based on the trade unions in the timber industry, and lots of water, not costing very much. And this has made a huge difference to the city and to the agricultural land outside.
In the first essay in this collection, Driving Home, you are on a massive road trip. But it seemed to me that what it was an exploration of the region that Seattle was the center of.
I found that incredibly. I kept on testing, actually, even after I'd written that essay. How far east do you have to go to lose Seattle as the capital, the place, you know, where you can see a Major League Baseball team or go to the theater or go out to fancy restaurants and the rest of it? And it fascinated me that I'd actually got across the North Dakota border. And I was still saying, you know, what team do you support? And it was the Mariners. Even at a ranch in North Dakota, I found that. Minneapolis was much closer. Chicago was looming closer. But people in the West seem rarely to look back east. They always kind of look forward. to the next city to the west, just as they did when the settlers, whom I described in Badland, failed. They came west. They drove until they saw a rainfall country, and they were in western Washington.
So this is a philosophical looking ahead. This is about looking to the future. This is about reimagining yourself as well as a place.
Absolutely, yes.
Was it for you as well when you came here?
No, it was sort of an accident, really. I mean, I loved the water around Seattle. I mean, the mixture of lakes and sea and rivers. Water has always been hugely important to me, and I thought this is one of the wateriest cities I've ever seen. And it was hugely attractive to me for that reason.
One of the things I love about these essays is how, and all your writing for that matter, writing that isn't in this volume as well, is how you can look at the United States from a vantage point of not of, but a little bit apart. But now you've been here so long, are you of this place rather than apart at this point?
I'm deeply conscious of being and remaining English and of this place being, for me, a foreign country. I mean, it is surprising to be in a supermarket every so often and hearing voices and thinking, why are all these people talking in their accent? I feel myself to be a stranger here.
Still?
Oh, yes.
I've been thinking a lot about the essay form, whether it's a 90-page essay or a 90-word essay, because there are some very short ones. And I think that some of the writers I admire most these days are the people who are somehow taking reportage and creating the universal from it, creating the universal recognition for their readers or the universal experience for their readers. Is that inherent to an essay?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, the question of the universal is above my pay grade.
I doubt
but
that.
There are certain things about the essay which has been around certainly since Michel de Montaigne, the great 16th century French essayist. People writing in the eye, being themselves, modestly so. It's not a vain form, but the first person is not only a witness, it's also evidence that this is somebody's experience. It has the authenticity of the private, the personal, one human being's ordinary life and their sense of citizenship. And it's a way of not having to write, as it were, the large perspective, universalist kind of take on history or whatever it is. It's a personal take.
But it strikes me that when you write about history through that first person, or whether you write about nature through that first person, or death through that person,
yes,
you wrote a book about that, that you are making it easier for it to be a universally accessible experience because it's in that first person as opposed to a large, weighty nonfiction tome that somebody's going to award the Pulitzer Prize to.
I think we all, to some extent, become the person who is the author. I mean, I find myself rather enviously fancying myself to be Gore Vidal when I read Gore Vidal, or fancying myself to be Joan Didion when I read Joan Didion. And I think that capacity to enter into the first person, its non-exclusive aspect, I mean, which enables every reader to be the writer, I think is hugely important. And it's one of the most sort of liberal and democratic things about the essay. It's a position which, if the essay is any good, it becomes an invitation to the reader to step inside that first person and share whatever it is the writer has to offer.
I just have a last question, going back to the this is something that you said about feeling very British and not of this place very much, an outsider. Part of the reason that you've stayed planted here is sitting in the other room in a chair behind your head. And she,
yes, I believe,
is in her 20s now, if I'm doing
the
math right.
She is 20.
20.
She is coming up to her 21st birthday.
Do you think that having your daughter leave unroots you somewhat from Seattle, i.e., could you leave here?
I don't think so. I mean, partly on the day after she had finished school in Seattle as a senior, I had a major, major stroke, followed by the amputation of a leg. So I became suddenly a cripple. By the way, when I said I feel irretrievably English, so I do. But that doesn't mean to say that I am not immersed in Seattle. I am, but I'm a stranger in his immersion. I mean, I am aware of my own strangeness here. And I think that's an important part when it comes to writing, that I've never managed to convince myself that I'm a citizen here.
That's Jonathan Rabin. His collection of essays is called Driving Home, An American Journey.